Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From 16 West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Welcome inside the North Carolina General Assembly for another edition of the program. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Today, your guest is Susan Roberts, a political science professor at Davidson College, joining us on the line to discuss, among other things, the presidency. Professor Roberts, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad you're here. This week began with plenty of dialogue about the March for Our Lives demonstrations that took place in Washington and really around the world. Also, the Stormy Daniels 60 Minutes interview. Then in recent days, the White House ordered 60 Russian diplomats to leave the country. President Trump went after Amazon on Twitter, claiming that the company doesn't pay enough taxes. Interesting, of course, and perhaps a little irony there. Meanwhile, his administration secured a trade deal with South Korea ahead of possible talks with the North. And as a bit of a kicker, Jeb Bush made a comment about how his children actually love him, taking a dig at Donald Trump Jr. And other Donald children. Professor, what is the most significant story to come out of the White House this week?
Well, I think the most significant story this week is all the things having to do with where he's been outspoken and silent. And without going into any of the details about Stormy Daniels and the talk on 60 Minutes, I think it's a collection of when he's tweeting and when he's not. He hasn't tweeted much about several of his removals of individuals from office. I think he did tweet about the VA director, and that was, he may have done that in person or he may have done that via Twitter. I can't remember. But I think this week has been one in terms of his reactions and not really kind of proaction. The meeting with North Korea and the Prime Minister, I think, is very significant. And I think that is one that reflects on his administration because it kind of caught them off guard as well.
As you consume this White House and this presidency, what are your practices for doing it? Are you a Twitter, a cable television person, a newspaper reader? How is it that you try to stay up to date and informed every day without getting oversaturated, if that's possible?
Well, one thing I don't do is I don't follow the president on Twitter, although I look, I'm more of a retweeter, and that's where I get my ideas about what to read, but more from newspapers and online sites such as Roll Call, Brookings, The Hill, Politico. That's where I get more of my news rather than really looking at exclusively Twitter. I think it's important, but I think it's one that I don't, it's more reaction. And even when there's a story breaking, I don't follow it in real time on Twitter, which some of my colleagues do.
Did you ever follow the president on Twitter and unfollow him, or that's just kind of been your, have you ever followed the president on Twitter?
No, I never have, and I think, you know, one of the things with all the media now is you can see if there's a tweet worth commenting on and one that's kind of salacious or inflammatory, you can see it. And I am not, I'm actually not one, and very happy now that I'm not one that has a Facebook page, so I don't really follow Twitter religiously, nor do I tweet religiously, but I don't get my information from Facebook, which a lot of students will get their keys to stories from Facebook. And I've always thought it was problematic in terms of the data that you're giving up and really Facebook's impact now on the integrity of the elections. And that's also a story that's really unraveling now that we're looking at Cambridge Analytica and what I've taught about in my campaign strategy class, which is micro-targeting, which has been widely accepted as a new and highly effective campaign tool. So I get most of my news from blogs that I trust by political scientists or from really some stories that I get from the newspaper.
You have been at Davidson College about 24 years now. That includes four presidents and six elections. And one of the things I'm interested to hear from you about is, how do you even begin to teach about Trump? So if you would, and I'm just way off on this, it strikes me that teaching your students about him and this White House must be very different than the other three presidents, Clinton, W. Bush, and Obama, that you've taught about. Is that the case? And how do you teach about him?
That's absolutely correct. And I think one of the challenges is to have this cohort of students not filter everything they know about the presidency through Donald Trump, and at the same time really having them get a sense of how extraordinary the Trump presidency really is. And it's not just a presidency in which we have a reality star TV. It has to do with presidential temperament and administrative skills and really skills, political skills about dealing with Congress, judicial branch. One of the things I do is I examine the literature in political science, and I don't want criticism that I'm just looking at Trump's political character, but there's a wide literature about presidential character that originated in the early 70s. And what you do find in there is that Trump has moved the calculus about how we assess presidential character. There's a literature about authoritarianism that existed well before Trump. And so I've always included that, but this is more of a challenge with the Trump administration. And I think I also let them know that some of the elections have been changed with changing technology. And Twitter is one of them in terms of how the president can affect, manipulate public opinion. And I think that's a real change. Also, there's been change when you look at even over the course of teaching the presidency about the degree of negativity, the degree of the importance of primaries, and these factors which have been changing and evolving, and they're not unique. You know, if I can be a little, Philip, one of my students said, this is the most negative, the dirtiest campaign I've ever seen. And to use a Southern expression, I said, bless your heart. How many have you seen?
Right.
And
they
really haven't paid attention to too many more than these, the current election. But it is a challenge. And when I taught it 2 years ago, it was, what if Trump gets elected? And we followed the battleground states and such. And now it is, what now? What kind of policy is coming out? What kind of style is the president using? How can he forward an agenda, and one that's palpable with his party and Congress and with the Democrats?
One of the things that strikes me in what you're just saying is that some of the issues Trump has had are not new. These are institutional fights with Congress. They're power struggles. What is most normal about President Trump? What is most similar to other presidents that you've studied and taught about?
Well, I think presidents, in terms of their administrative styles, have always struggled with the enlarged agenda, the size of government, bureaucratic inertia, bureaucratic momentum, and also looking at questions such as how to centralize power within the White House, how to coordinate power within the White House, whether or not that power is being politicized. Those really are challenges for any president. I think that the difference here is that there seems to be no one to do what so many people have made an effort in the past with every president, is an effort to reduce the isolation of the office. And I think with Trump shrinking and changing his advisors or gatekeepers, that's more of a challenge than we've had in the past. But all presidents have to deal with the bureaucracy, how to deal with Congress, and how just to deal with the permanent government employees that are there. I mean, the people that are civil servants and not going anywhere. And I think that's always been a challenge for all presidents. And I think Trump is no exception when it comes to that.
Do you find that what you're teaching about the presidency to your students in your classes has changed with this president, or is it really much of the same as you've done for two decades or so?
I think it's changed in several respects, and one is the lack of legislative background, and I think that's always been something. When we look at where we get the pool of eligible candidates, it's usually from either state house, the governor's mansion, and to some extent, not to what you would think, the House and the Senate. And I think coming from a business background is different. And I think, of course, we've been able to use case studies and where President and Congress work together or are at odds. And that's still kind of the Trump administration, unlike others. And this was curious. I'll just mention this. It was in the Weekly Standard several weeks ago in which they called, a conservative publication, they called President Trump's an ad hoc presidency. And, that's a challenge. I always tell my students, and this may be, I may be getting too much of an academic here, but that you need to study not just the president, but the presidency. And I think in this case with Trump, they've been merged because of how he wants to run the White House. His criteria of wanting loyalty is nothing new. I mean, presidents want help, and they want someone that they can trust. But I think it's the collapse of President Trump, or, when he was nominated, saying, I alone can do it, has really morphed into, I can do it alone. And that's a little bit... we just finished the President and Congress, and looking at that, it's a little bit of a challenge to not have the coordination or the strategies for dealing with the other branches.
Tell me a little bit about your students. I'm wondering what their most common questions about either President Trump or the presidency are, or what are the most common types of questions that you hear and that you've heard over the past year or so?
Sure. I think that it might be they look at what are the consequences and how they can use some of this material. What are the consequences of campaign finance changes? What are the consequences, say, of the fact that Trump has a different management style? What are the consequences of polarization? And I think students are getting a little bit jaded about, a dysfunctional government, dysfunctional Congress. And I think that that's one of the challenges. But they want to know, what are the consequences? Why do I need to know this? What is my goal in this? And when I teach public policy, it's very challenging because they're looking at crafting a policy and then being able to get a policy implemented, passed and implemented. And I think they're still, they're young and they're optimistic and idealistic. And I think they think if you just design a good policy, of course someone would recognize that and craft it better and then pass it and implement it. So I think it's still being optimistic in a time of really serious polarization and really serious questions about the size and scope of government. It's also I do a little bit about what I call, or what people are calling, hashtag politics, in terms of how this technology speeds up and wants, more reaction rather than really being more reflective. And that's something that's a little bit different. I don't think they realize how some of the technologies have changed the way they think about politics, or that we think about politics.
The White House, drives so much of what happens politically across the country down all the way to municipal and the local level, not only at the ballot box and how candidates of the president's party fare, but also the kinds of policy we see introduced at the state houses, and also the rhetoric. I'm wondering, with this president, if in this White House, what stands out, if anything, to you across those issues? The kind of candidates we've seen, the kind of policies we've seen, the kind of rhetoric that we've seen. What has been the trickle-down effect, as you've seen it, from President Trump? What stands out the most?
I think one of the things that stands out are the challenges to the ballot in terms of maybe changes in the Voting Rights Act, changes and Trump really making charges about some of the votes being cast illegitimately, and that comes down to a state like North Carolina, and there are questions about the integrity of the ballot box, protecting the ballot. And then also you have in North Carolina, in particular, you have control by the House and the Senate, but you don't have, of course, you have Roy Cooper, but the legislature can craft proposals that are very similar to those in the White House, such as limits on access to abortion, what we do with gun control, what we do with questions about election mechanics, questions about in North Carolina about drawing gerrymandered districts, and that's going on all across the country. And I think that we don't see sometimes, or students don't appreciate, nor do we appreciate, the small tweaks that can really affect the outcome. Gerrymandering used to be, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, a very boring kind of static thing to talk about. And I think those are things we're seeing in the courts all over the country. And you can see, say, in North Carolina and from the national level, a more conservative agenda because they can. The Republicans can pass it on the Hill, and we can pass it here in North Carolina. We being, not me, but we being North Carolina legislators. And, if we compare those, I'm not really convinced that the Democrats can take over the House and the Senate, nor do I think perhaps they can take over the State House and Senate. But I think there's some similarities, and this is one I just thought about since you mentioned it, and that is the impact of Trump on these local races. And usually the president loses seats in the midterm election because of presidential popularity and economic performance. Trump's popularity is ticking up. It's not moving up, but it's ticking up. And everybody's asking the question, what does Trump and any kind of scandal with rhetoric have to do with who gets elected in local elections, in the House and Senate races here? And sometimes it just turns down to the degree of satisfaction with one's, House member or senator. And I think that trickles down to how the campaigns are really driven. In terms of the rhetoric, I think we're seeing more and more bluntness from candidates at all levels, and some of that is very disturbing.
And we should note that the presidential approval ratings right now, about 14 months into this presidency for Donald Trump, are not all that dissimilar from where Barack Obama was in 2010. Right? I mean, I think I've read that recently. I can't remember, Washington Post or Wall Street Journal.
Sure, it's ticked up. And I think I also try to look at the disapproval rating, in which that's a little higher for Trump than it was for Obama. But no longer can people go back and say, goodness, we elected one of two candidates that had low trustworthiness in terms of public opinion polling, and President Trump is tanking when it comes to approval rating. It's ticking up, which is interesting given there have been a staff turnover and more kind of controversial decisions coming out, allegations of all these legal affairs and legal investigations. So I don't think some of these scandals, personal scandals, nor do I think all these investigations are really going to stick. I have people that ask me, well, don't you think this is going to really have an impact on the Trump presidency? Maybe he'll get impeached. And I have to say, I don't think so.
Susan Roberts teaches political science at Davidson College. You can follow her on Twitter at Prof, P-R-O-F, Sue, S-U, Roberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S. We're going to enter the express portion of the podcast here.
Sure.
And
yeah,
Move through some of these quickly. Donald Trump's biggest blunder in the past 14 months is what?
I think it's overestimating the fact that he can do it alone. And I think it's a question of not being able to say, I don't have to show my taxes. I think it's feeling like he's immune from some of the other pressures.
His greatest success since being sworn in?
I think one of his greatest successes is being able to give his base some information and some satisfaction that he can leverage, whether it be coal or whether it be feeling like he's draining the swamp. I think it's base politics, still campaigning while he's governing.
Who is the Speaker of the U.S. House 1 year from today, March 29th, 2019?
Well, that's a tough one. I don't think it's going to be Paul Ryan, and I don't think it's going to be Nancy Pelosi. I would expect, I mean, it would be a real, let's go out on a limb and say it's Mark Meadows.
Wow, interesting. My next question is going to be, is it going to be a Republican or a Democrat? But you're saying Republicans will maintain the majority in the House, and you think Mark Meadows of the 11th Congressional from here in North Carolina, leader of the Freedom Caucus, will be the next leader of the House, almost, and superseding Patrick McHenry, we should note.
Well, that's kind of, I'm going out on a limb to make it interesting
it
to
is.
Your listeners.
No, it is interesting.
And it could be Patrick McHenry, and it could be that the Democrats do, and it could be that they reelect Nancy Pelosi. I think the Democrats have to be more attentive to the younger voters and to the baggage that Nancy Pelosi has carried and continues to carry for the Democrats.
I was going to ask you for a bold election prediction in 2018, but you just gave it to me as part of the last question. So how about one additional bold election prediction, federal, state, local, whatever, for 2018?
I think bold in terms of a federal would be that the president is, that he resigns. But I think that's highly unlikely. I think he would resign before he is impeached because he always could play that quote-unquote Trump card that everybody's after him. Press, everybody's after him.
Davidson College has a free laundry service. Are faculty members like yourself eligible to use it?
No, we are not.
Too bad.
Too bad. And it keeps the students in clean sheets, as the parents say.
It's good. It is opening day as you and I chat. Baseball games, the 2018 Major League Baseball season begins later today. A favorite baseball player growing up? And if you didn't like baseball, you can obviously defer.
Oh, I liked baseball and always have, although I'm in the mind of March Madness. Mickey Mantle, I think those, I mean, I'm also a Red Sox fan, and I've got my son has a fat, you know, one of those fat heads of Poppy on the wall, as well as Tom Brady, which that may make some listeners cut off right now.
But now, wait a second, and I'm going to interrupt you, because as a kid who grew up outside of Boston, I don't know if I can accept you telling me you're a Red Sox fan, yet the first name you come up with is Mickey Mantle.
Well, I know, but you see, I grew up with just names.
Okay.
When you looked down, we had to just choose, you know, it wasn't quite as team-oriented down here because, you know, we didn't really know the Braves. That wasn't really an option for Southerners. You know, the Washington Senators, but who's going to go there? Because you could just choose, pick and choose. And I think it was a little more just that he looked like one of my uncles and, you know, with that crew cut.
Fair enough. Did you go to Yankee Stadium as a child growing up?
Oh, no, I didn't go to a professional baseball game until I was in graduate school. And, you know, then I latched on to the Cubs, and I kind of liked that underdog mentality. And I liked taking time off from graduate school to go see a baseball game.
All right. We'll end on a March Madness question. Noting the Cubs, you got your PhD from Notre Dame, which I imagine is why you have a bit of a Chicago affinity. Are you pulling for Loyola, Illinois, Loyola, Chicago in the next few days?
I am, and I like Villanova. And I was sometimes I judge my affection for a team by what I know about the coaches. And, you know, and I guess I grew up in North Carolina when they still played the Four Corners, and you had, you know, Carolina, Duke, and State, and Wake Forest. So when the ACC meant something.
Yeah, back when there were nine teams, and if somebody came to your, or if you went somewhere and lost, you knew that that team was coming to your house later in the season, you'd have a chance to kind of make amends.
Sure, and you know, I think that my spouse is the athletic director here at Davidson, so I, you know, I go have good seats at a lot of tournaments. I have met Steph Curry, have a picture with Steph Curry.
Jealous.
And so it kind of feeds into my natural love of sports.
It has been 10 years since Davidson went to the Elite Eight, just missing that Final Four berth with Steph Curry, losing to Kansas, the eventual national champion, 10 years ago. Kansas is knocking on the door again, but I am with you, Professor. I'd like to see Porter Moser and Loyola, Jay Wright and Villanova matching up on Monday night for the national championship.
I would, too. And I think that we've had some real hopeful stories about academic integrity and, you know, colorful fans and kind of institutional traditions that I like a lot. Instead of, you know, someone said not too long ago, had Davidson beaten Kansas 10 years ago, Bill Self would have been without a job the next day.
Yes, he would have, but he's not, and he's there again. Susan Roberts teaches political science at Davidson College. Her Twitter bio reads, "No slave to technology." Professor, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I look forward to it again.
As always, thanks for Click and Play and tuning into the WUNC Politics podcast. You can stay up to date with hashtag NCPOL news throughout the week at our website, WUNC.org. Remember to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already at iTunes or Google Play. And go ahead and recommend it to a friend, neighbor, or colleague if, in fact, you enjoyed what you heard this week. For Professor Susan Roberts, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk next week. Go Loyola.